resurrected. It was enough to ask the High Cleric to transform him back into his proper midget form from a lizard turd. Asking to bring him back with a full stomach would be pushing it.
That temple ain't going nowhere, said Denise. And it ain't right to go in there empty-handed.
I'm bringing them the Eye of Rasha. I think that should suffice.
Oh, come on! I got all these fucking freaks to feed, and we ain't had a proper meal in I don't know how long.
I think Butterbean and I can make it on our own from here. If you two want to hang out and eat, that's fine with me. I don't know how long resurrections generally take. If it's instantaneous, Tim and I will come back and join you here. If it's a lengthy process, you can bring me a couple of those pickled goose eggs when you're done eating.
Randy frowned. I ain't all that hungry, to be honest.
Poor guy was still thinking about Basil. Catherine felt a little guilty that they were on their way to bring back Tim when Randy didn't have that option with his recently deceased loved one.
I ain't never seen a pile of shit turn into a person before, said Denise. I reckon that'll be a sight to behold.
As they continued to the temple, Catherine's stomach grumbled with a combination of hunger and nervousness. There was still a lot of uncertainty. Those people who died in the fire at the horse head came back normal enough, as did all the people who got turned into zombies when the flying boat attacked the city. Hell, even Catherine felt like her old self after getting unvamped. But those were all cases of simply reuniting a lost soul with its host body, or so she theorized. Tim would have to be reconstructed from scratch, and his soul, wherever it was, had been away from his body for quite some time. She'd essentially just brought these guys a sample of his DNA. Were they merely going to clone him? That would be awful. Not only would she be responsible for incubating and raising some test tube embryo, but it wouldn't even be Tim. It would just be an exact genetic match of his fantasy body. Even worse, it would be a constant reminder that the real Tim, her brother, was really and truly dead. And even if they were able to grow an adult version of Tim's body and put his soul back in it, would the time it had spent in the afterlife change him? Was she about to rip him out of some eternal paradise? She supposed it was more likely that she'd be rescuing him from eternal suffering in hell, but even then, would his mind be all fucked up from being tortured and burned? Or would he become some kind of pain in the ass born again? All of these questions were making her second-guess her decision to bring him back at all. She stopped at the vine-curtained entrance of the Temple of Life. Randy and Denise looked at her as if they were awaiting further instructions.
No, Catherine, that's just the resurrection jitters. It probably happens to everyone in this situation. Tim will be fine. You've come all this way. You can't turn back now. You can't tell Randy that Basil died for nothing.
May I help you?
Asked a heavy-set bald woman, with tired eyes and a tone that didn't suggest a desire to be helpful, as soon as they stepped through the open front gate. Catherine didn't want anything from this woman, except for her to get the fuck out of the way.
I'm looking for Brother Mayfair. Brother Mayfair is in meditation with the High Cleric. Awesome, we need to see him, too.
Her, the woman corrected.
Meditation is not to be disturbed. You'll have to come back another time.
And who the fuck are you, Q-Ball?
My name is Shelda Moonfist, acolyte in training here at the Temple of Life. My duties include seeing that the High Cleric is not disturbed during her meditation.
We've been through a heck of a time, ma'am, said Randy, stepping forward. If we could just
stay where you are.
Shelda struck some kind of karate pose, threatening Randy with two fists and a raised foot.
Take another step, and I shall unleash my flurry of blows upon you.
I hate to break it to you, lady, said Denise, but I reckon you're barking up the wrong tree.
Catherine put her hand on Randy's shoulder and pulled him back gently.
Let's all calm down. Nobody is going to blow anybody. I have something for the High Cleric. It's something she'll want as soon as possible.
Shelda lowered her foot and hands.
You may entrust it with me, and I shall see that it gets delivered to the High Cleric once her meditation is complete. I'm sorry, but fuck that. This isn't a basket of cookies. I've got the Eye of Rasha, and I'll not be entrusting it to anyone but the High Cleric herself, and only then on the terms I made with Brother Mayfair.
Shelda scowled at Catherine.
Take your foul tongue and blasphemy elsewhere. You are not welcome on this sacred ground.
It was time to pull out the big guns. Catherine reached into the bag of holding.
Ice Queen Scepter!
When she pulled the stone chunk of scepter out of the bag, she could see the glowing blue gem reflected in Shelda's astonished eyes.
I guess you can tell the High Cleric that she can find us at the Stinky Pickle when she gets a free moment.
Right on,
said Denise, as Catherine put the scepter back into the bag of holding and turned to leave the Temple of Life.
Wait!
Catherine smiled to herself, then turned around.
Yes?
Shit,
said Denise. Shelda bowed deeply.
I beg your forgiveness, holy messenger of Rasha.
Take it down a notch, Mrs. Clean. I'm not. I shall take you directly to the High Cleric at once.
On second thought, maybe riding this holy messenger of Rasha thing was the way to go. Catherine performed a grand but ambiguous gesture with her right hand.
You are forgiven. Rasha is pleased with your service. Now go forth and, lead the way.
Shelda led them to the altar in front of the giant statue of Rasha, where she talked to Brother Mayfair before. A radiant, silver-haired elf woman in gold-trimmed white robes sat cross-legged 3 feet above the ground. Five subordinate clerics, dressed in nicer robes than the humble potato sack Shelda was wearing, but not quite so fancy as the elf woman's, likewise hovered in a sitting position around her, all facing toward her with their heads bowed deeply. Catherine recognized one of them as Brother Mayfair.
High Cleric!
Shelda called out. The elf woman's eyelids opened wide, revealing only bright blue light where eyeballs conventionally reside. She was quick enough to lower her feet and land gracefully in a standing position. Her underlings, whom she'd apparently been suspending in the air as well, weren't as quick. They cried out as they landed on their asses.
Wah! Ooh! 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 Harder!
The others all turned to the olive-skinned half-elf, whose cry was the most unusual and specific. The light from the High Cleric's eyes dimmed as she narrowed her eyes.
Sister Kalia! Challenge me harder, Rasha!
Sister Kalia continued hurriedly with her head bowed.
Then I may serve you better.
Not save, Denise muttered.
The High Cleric's narrow-eyed gaze whipped toward them, specifically toward Shelda.
For what purpose do you disturb my meditation?
Shelda took a knee and bowed.
Please forgive me, High Cleric. These people arrived and I... You give them a warm bowl of porridge and a blessing, then send them on their way. Who trained this one?
That was me, High Cleric,
said Sister Kalia. In spite of the High Cleric's eyes being spheres of magical energy, Catherine thought she detected a roll.
Of course it was. Take her to the Dais of Shame, strip off her clothes, and strike your open palm against her naked flesh until she walks again in Rasha's light.
Shelda and Sister Kalia locked eyes briefly, each of them biting their lower lip. Catherine suspected this might be less of a punishment than the High Cleric intended, and might actually be an activity these two practiced regularly in their downtime.
Excuse me, said Catherine, but we're not homeless.
Well, said Randy.
Okay, I guess technically that's not true, but we're not here to beg for food.
I don't know, said Denise. Some of that warm porridge would go down real nice about now.
Would you shut the fuck up for a second?
Catherine waved at Brother Mayfair.
Do you remember us?
How could I forget?
He gave the High Cleric a small, embarrassed smile.
Well, this is the young woman who delivered us the full jar of basilisk excrement.
Lovely.
The High Cleric looked Catherine up and down and sniffed the air.
She appears to have brought more with her. Listen, lady, said Catherine. I've had to put up with a lot of shit over the past couple of weeks, so maybe dial back the bitch.
She turned to Brother Mayfair, who was visibly shocked.
I've got the thing you asked for. Do we still have a deal?
The thing?
Catherine nodded up at the statue of Rasha, more specifically at the empty socket in the middle of its forehead. Brother Mayfair turned to the statue, then back to Catherine.
Impossible!
The High Cleric raised her eyebrows.
Brother Mayfair?
I told her that you would resurrect her brother.
Did you?
On the condition that she returned here with the Eye of Rasha.
The other four not quite as high clerics gasped. The High Cleric seemed less impressed.
You brought us a jar of shit the last time you visited. Your gifting skills are much improved.
That jar of shit is my brother,
said Catherine. She thrust her hand into the bag of holding.
Ice Queen's scepter!
When she pulled it out, the High Cleric stumbled backward and shielded her eyes.
The eye!
She cried, her voice trembling with fear. She looked at Catherine with normal blue eyes like a scared child.
Please, you understand not the awesomeness of the power you wield.
I don't want to wield it, said Catherine. I want to cash it in. Can you magic that shit jar back into my brother, or can't you? The High Cleric seemed confused and distrustful, but she nodded.
If the Eye of Rasha is returned to its rightful place, it is within my granted powers to do as you ask.
Okie dokie, said Catherine, a little weirded out by how much of a thing the High Cleric was making of this.
Here you go.
She held out the scepter to the High Cleric, who backed away further.
Careful! The one you call the Ice Queen was one of us before she was driven mad with lust for the Eye's power. Anyone who touches the Eye will suffer the same fate.
Lucky I didn't touch it then. Catherine glared at Brother Mayfair.
That would have been nice to know going in.
Brother Mayfair bowed.
My apologies. Our meeting was brief, and I expected you to either give up, become enslaved, or die long before that knowledge would have benefited you.
Whatever, said Catherine. What the hell do you want me to do with this thing?
The High Cleric pointed a trembling hand at the altar.
Place it on the altar. We shall handle it from there.
Catherine did as she was told, a little more carelessly than she should have. She was growing impatient. The brittle stone of the scepter shattered against the much firmer stone of the altar, leaving the Eye of Rasha free and exposed. The High Cleric breathed out a sigh of relief, as if Catherine was a child who just set down an assault rifle she thought was a toy. She whispered a quick incantation, pointed at the glowing blue stone, then raised it telekinetically into place on the statue. All three stones glowed a bit brighter, then dimmed back to their normal glow.
Yay,
said Catherine, underwhelmed at the payoff for all that effort.
So can we get this resurrection thing rolling now?
The High Cleric of the Temple of Life is true to her word,
she gave Brother Mayfair a small sideways glare.
Or to the word of those who would assume to speak for her,
she smiled at Catherine.
I don't believe you appreciate the gravity of the service you have performed here. While it's true, under normal circumstances, that resurrection is a substantial favor to ask of a goddess, your brother's life is worth so much less than what you've done here today.
Catherine sighed.
Oh, sounds like you knew him.
The High Cleric turned to Shelda.
I apologize to you. You were right to disturb my meditation, and I was wrong to speak to you as I did.
It's nothing, High Cleric. Please don't give it another thought.
Shelda's gaze flicked toward Sister Kalia.
Shall I strike my open palm against her bare buttocks?
Asked Sister Kalia. The High Cleric shook her head.
I see no reason for that now. She has done no wrong. I have other sins for which I might be punished, said Shelda, kind of grasping at straws now. And the junior monks have been long without a reminder of Rasha's justice.
She gave Catherine a simpering smile.
I am inspired by this woman's bravery, and would be honored to suffer on the dais of shame.
Brother Mayfair and two other male clerics slouched to allow their robes to hang more loosely over their growing erections.
Very well, said the High Cleric, waving Shelda and Sister Kalia away. I have more urgent matters to attend to.
The two young women ran off giddily to get their kink on in front of an audience. The High Cleric strode gracefully to the altar and brushed away the remains of the Ice Queen's scepter.
Brother Mayfair, fetch the jar of...
She looked at Catherine.
Tim, said Catherine.
Yes, said the High Cleric. And the other components necessary to complete the spell. You can find lists in the sacred texts.
Brother Mayfair bowed.
Right away, High Cleric.
While he was away, the High Cleric produced an assortment of magical knick-knacks and doodads from inside the altar and placed them on top. She lit candles at each corner, then crushed herbs and stirred them into an oil which smelled strongly like a mixture of pine sol and raid. While she sprinkled the mixture on the altar, Catherine voiced her concerns about the spell.
Is my brother going to be different in any way?
We all cope with trauma in our own way. Judging by the state of his remains, I would guess he did not part from this life peacefully.
Catherine shook her head.
There was a fair amount of trauma involved.
He will retain the memory of everything that happened until his spirit slipped away from his body. It's up to you, the people who care about him, to help guide him on the path toward inner peace.
Sure, said Catherine. I'll be all over that. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't ripping his soul out of heaven or whatever your religion's equivalent is. Valhalla? Nirvana? Soundgarden?
The High Cleric looked at her curiously.
Do you speak of the Celestial Plains? Yes.
That sounded good enough to Catherine.
Fear not. If your brother is so noble or useful to the gods, they shall simply deny my request.
I don't foresee that being an issue.
Brother Mayfair huffed and panted as he jogged back to the altar, hugging the jar and a few other ritual things. He looked like he'd spent less time following the path toward inner peace and spiritual enlightenment, and more time following the path toward the refrigerator. He stopped and kneeled before the altar, then approached and placed the jar on top. Still panting, he said,
"Rushes will be done."
Tim was looking pretty grim inside the jar. The basilisk shit had dried out, shrinking down to about a third of the mass it had been, and had grown some kind of white mold or fungus. When the High Cleric removed the lid from the jar, it was as if Rasha herself had lowered her great godly ass from on high to smite them all with a Taco Bell fart.
"God damn," said Denise. "Your brother's fucking ripe."
Even the High Cleric, who should have been a paragon of professionalism, seemed to be fighting to not puke her guts out. Catherine wanted to tell them all to grow the fuck up. It's not like none of them had never smelled shit before. But she remained silent, preferring to breathe as little as was necessary to remain alive. The High Cleric turned the jar over and dumped the small pile of basilisk shit into the bowl where she'd mixed the oil and crushed herbs. When she put her hands in and started kneading, Catherine was now the one who had to concentrate to keep herself from vomiting.
"What's this?"
asked the High Cleric, pulling a shit-covered something out from the mixture. Brother Mayfair squinted at it.
"A bone, perhaps?"
"I think not. It feels metallic."
She set it aside and continued kneading.
"I need flour."
Catherine thought she might have misheard, but Brother Mayfair poured fine white powder from one of the other jars he'd returned with. She hoped that Tim wasn't going to come back as a gingerbread man. When the kneading was done and the air was a little clearer, the High Cleric lifted the mixture out of the bowl. It appeared to have a consistency similar to Play-Doh. That made more sense when she actually started sculpting it. She squeezed a round blob out at the top, forming a crude head, then four longer and thinner appendages from what remained. Artistically, it was less effort than a 6-year-old would have put into making a clay person, but that appeared to be good enough for Rasha. She laid the figure down on the center of the altar. Brother Mayfair pinched 3 sparkling stones from a small silk pouch and placed them delicately on the altar. They appeared to be 2 diamonds and a large ruby. Catherine hadn't realized how expensive this was going to be. She felt cheap for not having stopped at the stinky pickle on the way here. The High Cleric pushed the 2 diamonds into the shit figure's head where the eyes would be. The ruby she pushed into its chest, then pinched the opening shut. Denise picked up a twig from the ground and broke a piece off.
"You can use this if you want to give him a wiener."
Though she sounded sincere, the High Cleric ignored her and Randy giggled. To be fair to Randy, the proportions of the stick Denise had offered compared to the figure on the altar would have given Tim a dick longer than his arms. The High Cleric put the metal thing she'd found in the basilisk shit into the mixing bowl, then placed the bowl on the ground next to the altar and spoke the word,
"Water!"
in a British accent. Crystal clear water poured out of thin air about a foot above the bowl, then got a little murkier when it mixed with the residual oil, flour, and basilisk shit. It got murkier still when she knelt by the bowl and began scrubbing her hands in it.
"Is this part of the spell?" asked Catherine.
The High Cleric stopped scrubbing and glared up at her.
"I'd prefer to proceed with clean hands, if that's quite all right with you."
Thinking back on how she began, she could see how she might have accidentally come off as an impatient bitch.
"I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that. Here."
Catherine knelt on the opposite side of the bowl and dipped a finger in.
"Purify!"
The water instantly turned as clear as it had been when the High Cleric magicked it into existence, and she looked shocked to discover that she was now scrubbing perfectly clean hands. She stood up, staring at her hands.
"I can't believe I've never thought to do that before."
She pulled the mystery item out of the bowl. It appeared to have some sort of clasp decorated with an image of a face, or rather halves of 2 different faces joined together.
"What is that?"
asked Catherine.
"It looks like a hair clip," said the High Cleric. "Did it not belong to your brother?"
"Not that I'm aware of."
She held it out to Catherine.
It was in your jar. It's yours if you want it.
Catherine didn't currently give a shit about accessorizing right now, but in the interest of keeping things moving, she accepted the clip and put it in her pocket.
Thanks.
The high cleric covered the shit figure in a white linen cloth, then spread her arms wide. The candles all ignited at once, and her eyes went back to being orbs of bright blue light. Catherine stepped back to where Randy and Denise had just been, but discovered that they had also taken a step back. The sky darkened as the high cleric spoke an incantation in a language that Catherine didn't understand. Heavy raindrops fell on the altar, sporadically at first, then more consistently. Several times they hit the candle flames directly, producing a sizzling sound, but failing to extinguish the flames. The white linen cloth took the shape of the figure underneath it as it became saturated with water, then it moved. It was a nearly imperceptible wiggle at first, and Catherine thought she might have imagined it, but there was no such doubt about the arm jerk that followed. The figure grew slowly beyond the cloth, its texture transforming from shit clay to more substantial flesh. The diamonds sank deeper into forming sockets. Other cavities opened below them, which would become nostrils and a mouth. The arms and legs sprouted fingers and toes and became more smooth and slender. In fact, they looked to be a little too slender for a halfling. But who was she to tell a goddess she was fucking up her resurrection? The arms and legs would sort themselves out. But when the figure on the table continued to grow bigger than Tim was supposed to be and didn't show any signs of slowing down, Catherine couldn't keep her mouth shut anymore.
Hey, can you shut this off? He's getting too big. He's supposed to be a halfling.
No, he isn't, said Brother Mayfair.
The high cleric looked confusedly at Catherine.
I thought you said this was your brother.
Brother Mayfair responded before Catherine could finish rolling her eyes.
I brought this up when she arrived last time, and she seemed to be aware of certain irregularities of her claim.
Yes, said Catherine. The fact that my brother is a halfling was the irregularity I was referring to. What else did you think?
Unless he was coming back as Tim Tim. Between this and teleporting, she might have discovered a back door to get things back to normal without having to deal with Mordred or his stupid dice. She stared into Brother Mayfair's eyes.
Is he human?
Brother Mayfair looked even more confused than before.
No, of course not. Do you honestly have no idea who we're currently resurrecting?
Now that he mentioned it, she wasn't sure that she did. Catherine bit her lower lip for a moment, staring at the slender humanoid creature growing organs and bones under translucent gray skin on the altar, then looked back up at Brother Mayfair.
You're sure you got the right jar, right?
How many of these do you think I have?
Something didn't add up. What was with the hair clip? Could Brother Mayfair have swapped Tim's remains out for someone he wanted to bring back? Catherine stalked up to the altar and got in his face.
I don't know, but if the person on that altar turns out to be your dead wife or a hooker you accidentally killed or some shit, we're gonna have...
Hey!
Said Randy excitedly as he approached the altar.
I think I know this guy.
He pulled the cloth down to cover the person's developing genitalia.
I saw him at the Horse Head Inn that night when Tim killed Mordred.
Catherine had to admit, now that his features were starting to get more defined, he did look vaguely familiar. When his skin became opaque and darkened, and white hair sprouted out the top of his head, it finally clicked.
Tanner?
Tanner sat bolt upright, opened his eyes, and sucked in as much air as his lungs could take in. His terrified gaze jumped between everyone standing around him like he was a chicken which had just woken up in a den of foxes. Finally, he locked eyes with Catherine. He looked no less terrified, but a little more confused.
Catherine, where am I? What happened?
His eyes rolled up and he collapsed. Randy caught his head just in time to keep him from bonking it on the hard stone altar.
He must rest, said the high cleric. His body needs time to adjust.
Catherine didn't want to seem ungrateful for what the high cleric had done for her, but this wasn't something she could shrug off like getting fries when she'd ordered onion rings.
I'm sorry, high cleric, but this isn't my brother.
Brother Mayfair looked annoyed.
I tried to tell you that when we first met. You're the one who insisted he was your brother.
Catherine turned to Randy.
You're sure Basil ate Tim? You saw him, right?
I only saw the last part of it. I saw a little hand, so I knew he ate somebody.
but I didn't know it was Tim until you flew down on that Pegasus and told me he just fell off that island.
Was it possible that Tanner could have been down there in the desert as well? No, that was ridiculous. He wasn't anywhere around there. Catherine mustered up the nerve to give the High Cleric of Rasha a stern look.
There's been a mistake.
The High Cleric smiled.
The gods do not make mistakes. Such is the nature of divinity.
She turned to Denise.
Come forward, little dwarf. Rasha wishes to reward you as well.
Denise put her hand to her chest.
Me?
Her shocked expression morphed into smugness as she nodded.
It's about time someone showed me some proper respect.
She waddled up to the High Cleric.
You are with child, are you not?
The High Cleric asked rhetorically. Denise's eyes lit up.
Is that something you and Rasha can take care of, if you catch my meaning?
Your children are not well.
Ain't that a goddamn shame?
Denise shrugged, clapped her hands, then rubbed them together.
Well then, I reckon it's best not to make them suffer any longer. If you'll kindly help me onto the altar here, I'll spread my legs and you can whip out your coat hanger of mercy or whatever and get this fucking nightmare over with.
The High Cleric took a knee in front of Denise.
Be still, for you have nothing to fear.
She reached her right hand up under Denise's skirt.
God damn, woman! You just gonna go up in there and pull them out with your bare hands? That's fucking hardcore. You got anything I can bite down on? Maybe a stick or a broom handle or something?
Fear not, for you will feel no pain. Perhaps just a mild tingling sensation.
Denise tilted her head back and closed her eyes.
Oh, yeah, Mama. You got me tingling all right. I could get used to...
Her eyes suddenly went wide as golf balls.
Holy fucking shit!
Denise!
Cried Randy.
Are you?
It is finished!
The High Cleric removed her arm, glistening and dripping up to the elbow. Thankfully, Brother Mayfair was quick to wrap a cloth around it.
Oh. My. God!
Denise panted as she steadied herself against the altar.
That was fucking amazing! I want to go out and get knocked up again right now, just so I can get another magical abortion.
The High Cleric removed her hand and stood.
Your children are now healthy. Rasha's mercy will keep both you and them safe from harm until they leave your womb.
Denise's jaw dropped.
The fuck are you talking about? That ain't what I wanted. I need these fucking monsters out of my body.
The High Cleric glared at Denise, then at Catherine.
Recipients of gifts from the gods generally show more gratitude.
She turned to Randy.
Perhaps the paladin can set an example for you both.
Randy looked up like the teacher had asked him to answer a question when he hadn't been paying attention.
Rasha's got something for me, too?
She does not.
Oh,
said Randy, looking unsure as to how he was supposed to set an example with his reaction to that. He cleared his throat.
I am okay with that. Rasha's will be...
Your gift comes from the new god,
the High Cleric said, smiling warmly at him.
He says you have served him well, and you have proven yourself worthy of a mount.
Like a horse?
Randy frowned.
That's real thoughtful, but I don't reckon I'm ready for that kind of responsibility. I failed the last animal I tried to take care of.
You are free to dismiss your mount at any time, said the High Cleric. It will await your summons from the celestial plane in which it resides. Once per day, you may call its name, and it will appear before you, ready to serve.
What's its name?
The High Cleric gave him a curious frown.
The new god said you would know.
Basil,
said Denise. Catherine had half a mind to deck her for making such an insensitive joke, but Denise wasn't smiling. Her eyes were wide, focusing on something behind Catherine and Randy.
Yeah, yeah.
Catherine and Randy turned around. Basil, or at least a shining silver version of him, stared at them with large, glowing white eyes, which fortunately didn't turn them all into stone.
Basil!
Cried Randy joyfully.
You're okay? Alive?
He scratched his chin.
What are you exactly?
A paladin's mount is no normal animal,
the High Cleric explained.
It is a heavenly beast selected by a god or goddess for a paladin when he or she deems their servant worthy of the honor. Your love for this creature earned it a place in the heavens, and your devotion to the new god moved him so much
that he saw fit to reunite you." While everyone else was checking out the new and improved Basil, Catherine held back to reflect on the Tanner thing. She believed Randy's account of what he saw, but it didn't add up with what she was seeing now. Tanner would hopefully be able to fill in some of the gaps when he woke back up, but if his remains were the shit in the jar, then where the hell was Tim?
"Thank you, High Cleric,"
she said as sincerely as she could fake. She waved up at the sky.
"And thank you, gods!"
She nudged Randy.
"Help me back up Tanner. We've got to get back to the Horse Head."
Chapter 54.
"Maybe Darton swiped it from you,"
suggested Julian, as he and Stacy drank beer and digested their dinner. He could tell she was still trying to figure out what had happened to the dye.
"You mentioned that things got a little feely between you and him in his hotel room, if I recall your phrasing correctly."
Stacy smirked at him.
"They didn't get that feely, but it's cute that you're still bothered about it."
Julian's heartbeat began to quicken. He was onto something. He knew there was a reason beyond petty jealousy. He'd gotten a bad vibe from Darton.
"How feely would he really have to get?"
he asked Stacy.
"Catherine's black elf friend swept the dice back from Frank without sexually assaulting him. With a high enough dexterity score..."
Julian remembered Darton barely being able to walk without falling over. He sighed.
"Oh, never mind."
Still, it nagged at him. It was the only explanation that even came close to making sense.
"Darton's high on my list of suspects," said Stacy. "For all we know, those guys who came in and arrested him could have been friends of his, or people he hired to get him away from us after the job was done. But there are a couple of problems with that theory."
"Which are?"
"Motive, for one. Sure, he must have guessed that the dice were valuable, but you don't go to that kind of effort for something you don't know anything about."
That sounded like weak reasoning to Julian.
"You might, if the thing is valuable enough. We don't know how much those rich wizards are willing to pay for that kind of bling."
"I'm pretty sure he didn't swap it out while I was sleeping. Not only would that have been extremely difficult to do without risking a very awkward moment followed by a knee to the nuts, but when would he have had time to get a replica made? We were with him the whole time."
"He could have sneaked out for a couple of hours. We were on an island of powerful wizards. For the right price, I'm pretty sure it's easy enough to get a guy to conjure up a replica of whatever you want."
"Why go to all that bother? It would have been half as risky just to swap the pendant while I was sleeping and make a run for it."
"That's a good point."
Julian felt like he was on the right path, in spite of the number of times it kept seeming to lead to dead ends. Another theory occurred to Julian that would fill in some of the gaps.
"What if he was working for Mordred?"
he gasped.
"What if he was Mordred?"
Stacy shook her head and started counting off on her fingers.
"One, Darton didn't come looking for us. We walked into the bar he was already drinking at. Two, Mordred didn't know the dice were missing until just now. Three, even if he did know, he wouldn't have known what kind of jewelry they were mounted in. And four, that still wouldn't explain why he would go to the trouble of making a replica."
"Wow, you really have put a lot of thought into this."
Stacy nodded.
"And I'm smart as shit."
Julian rubbed his temples.
"So let's step back a bit. If the swap didn't happen while you were sleeping, it had to have happened at the restaurant, right?"
"That seems like the most likely place."
"This lunch thing was completely orchestrated by Darton."
"We're just going around in circles now, Julian," said Stacy. "I know you want it to be Darton, and frankly, you're starting to get kind of weirdly obsessive about him. The more I think back on it, the more I see him as kind of a loser, stumbling directionless through life like he stumbled through his hotel room. He tried to pass himself off as suave and successful, but I could see a certain sad desperation in his eyes, and I had a similar feeling when he kissed me. It felt like..."
"Stop!"
"Sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned..."
"Seriously,"
said Julian.
"Shut up for a second. I think I've got something."
His mind was thinking about things that made him uncomfortable, but he couldn't afford to shut down those thoughts. He didn't have all the pieces of the puzzle yet, but there was one glaring problem that he could bring to the surface right now. He reached into his pocket, grabbed the silver coin Darton had thrown at him in the restaurant, and slapped it down on the bar. Stacy frowned at it.
"Is that a tip?"
"Darton threw this at my head from halfway across the restaurant."
"Please tell me that's not what's fueling your vindictive obsession.
I was really hoping that had more to do with me.
Julian smiled in spite of where the evidence was leading.
He threw this across the room with pinpoint accuracy. That would require a pretty high dexterity score, wouldn't you think?
Stacy took a moment to think.
So you're suggesting the whole clumsy thing was just an act?
To what end? He didn't swap pendants with you. He swapped them with me.
Julian pounded his fist on the bar.
It was out of my sight for less than a second.
What are you talking about, Julian?
When I took the pendant to Alaric of Whitewood's table, he asked if he could hold it. I allowed him to on the condition that he let me hold his cane. That son of a bitch was in on it. He passed it to Darton, who came over to join us, and Darton dropped it below the table. It was meant to look clumsy, but it was a sleight-of-hand trick. Those smug bastards told me I had a cheap reproduction while they were actually handing me a cheap reproduction.
Stacy sighed. And a few minutes after that, Darton got arrested.
It gets worse.
How could it?
Who do we know with a high dexterity who would jizz his pants at being able to give you a sad and desperate kiss, and who has the brains and motive to fake his own death?
Stacy gasped.
Oh, no.
The front door burst open with some sort of groaning howl that sounded like Chewbacca with a cold. A giant silver dinosaur head with glowing white eyes continued its terrifying cry.
Shit!
Cried Tony the Elf.
It's Mordred! He's come for us!
He grabbed a bow from under the bar like he'd been waiting for this opportunity for quite some time, knocked an arrow, then fired it into the magical creature's neck.
Dismiss!
Said a familiar voice from beyond the door. The silver dinosaur vanished like one of Julian's horses. Then Randy walked in, followed by Catherine. Catherine took a knee and reached into her bag of holding. She pulled out Butterbean, her black half-elf friend, who was naked, and Denise. They all lay on the floor, gasping for air.
Catherine!
Said Julian. She looked kind of pissed off, so he was hesitant to bring up such a touchy subject, but he had to know.
Did you have any luck getting Tim brought back to life?
No. In fact, I've got a shitload of questions. I'm not even sure Tim is dead.
Julian and Stacy glanced at each other. Julian took a deep breath.
We've got a working theory on that.
Chapter 55. Sitting in a steel cage in the sewer for multiple days was surprisingly exhausting. Dave guessed that was mostly due to him going apeshit in rat monster form. He didn't have any memory of that time, but he was pretty sure he didn't spend it sleeping. One minute, he'd be having convulsions as his body started to change, and the next thing he knew, he was sore and out of breath. Rat Dave was clearly not as chill in his confinement as Dwarf Dave. Aside from the fact that they were keeping him locked in a cage in a sewer, his captors didn't seem particularly cruel. They didn't beat him or torture him for information, and they kept him fed with some kind of gray sludge that tasted like spoiled yogurt textured with minced assholes. Now that he thought about it, he might have had too low a bar for how he defined non-cruelty.
He's in here,
said one of the female were-rats from just outside the secret door hidden in the wall. She was the one Dave was starting to develop a Stockholm Syndrome crush on.
I don't know what you want with him. I know our numbers are down since the crazed half-orc slaughtered so many of us, but this one strikes me as one of the least interesting or special people I've ever interacted with.
Ouch.
I would like to speak with him alone,
said a voice that sounded both familiar and peculiarly unfamiliar at once. It reminded Dave of a high school theater student trying to mimic an old man's voice in a play. Dave stood and picked some dried bits of vomit out of his beard in a weak effort to make himself as presentable as possible. These were going to be the first words anyone had spoken to him in days, and it might be an interview that would determine whether he was going to be assimilated into the group or murdered. Come on, Dave. You can be interesting, or at least you can fake it. An old gnome slipped into the room. Whether it was his grim expression or the way the flickering torchlight accentuated the creases on his face, something about this little gnome creeped Dave out more than any of his larger companions.
Howdy!
Dave blurted out with a big, stupid grin and an exaggerated wave of his hand. That may have been the worst diplomacy fail in the history of the game. The gnome stopped in his tracks with a perplexed look on his face.
And howdy to you as well.
Dave stopped being creeped out and embarrassed,
when it dawned on him who this guy was.
I know you. Do you now?
Said the gnome.
You were the guy who freed us from those cages on the Crescent Shadow.
The gnome put up his hands, palms facing forward.
Guilty as charged. I never got a chance to thank you. Things got kind of hectic after that.
And how is it that, hundreds of miles away, I come to find you in a cage once again?
Dave sighed.
Ah, it's a long story.
The old gnome smiled.
I'm keen to hear it, if you don't have any other plans.
I ate a contaminated turkey leg and contracted lycanthropy. Some people I thought were my friends turned on me, and I made a run for it. Then these guys caught me and locked me in here. Now that I say it aloud, I guess it isn't a very long story at all.
Friendship can be a fickle institution. I put more value in relationships rooted in common problems and shared goals.
That sounds practical, I guess.
That's why I think you'll make a good partner in a little project I'm working on.
Dave didn't like the sound of this at all. It felt like he was being hustled, like his freedom was going to depend on him agreeing to join this guy in some kind of timeshare scheme.
What kind of common problems and shared goals do we have?
I'm a were-rat, just like you, said the gnome. I suppose that counts as a common problem, but it's a manageable one, and I've grown to enjoy some of its benefits. I'm more concerned with the goals we share.
What do you know about my goals?
I know a lot about you, Dave.
How do you know my name?
I know you've had a secret crush on Stephanie Whitmore since the third grade. I know you left Rob Ryder's party without telling anyone because you clogged up his toilet and made it overflow your shit water all over the bathroom floor.
The gnome smiled.
And I know it was you who spilled root beer on Cooper's Xbox.
Dave had officially reached his threshold of being creeped out. He pressed his back against the wall and hugged his knees.
How do you know that?
The gnome shrugged.
Because I was sitting right next to you, dumbass.
He reached behind his head and felt around for something in his hair. When he pulled his hand away, his appearance changed suddenly, like the naked people at the end of Michael Jackson's Black or White video.
Tim?
Dave could barely croak out the word.
I thought we all saw you. How?
Tim held up the clip he'd pulled out of his hair when he looked like a gnome. It had a design like a face made out of the halves of two different faces joined together.
This is hands down one of the coolest magic items in the game.
That was an easy explanation to comprehend, but it begged another question.
If Mordor didn't kill you, then who did he kill?
Jesus Christ, Dave. Mordor didn't kill anybody. I was Mordred.
Dave took a moment to realign the thoughts in his head. Unless he was mistaken, that just made things worse.
Then you slit someone's throat and kicked them off the platform?
Correct.
Another terrible thought occurred to Dave.
Was he Mordred?
No, said Tim, like he was annoyed at having been asked. I admit I fucked up when I killed that other Mordred. That was impulsive, and I regret having done it.
So who did you kill?
That NPC douchebag who was hanging out with Catherine. That reminds me, what happened to her? I noticed she wasn't in her cage when I went down to rescue you.
She caught a ride down on a Pegasus.
Tim nodded.
Sweet.
She was going after your dead body to get you brought back to life.
Yikes, said Tim. That could be awkward. We'll have to get the ball rolling on those shared goals we talked about.
He opened his shirt, exposing his dark, coarse chest hair and the silver chain running through it down either side of his neck. At the end was a silver dragon claw grasping a black 20-sided die.
What do you say, Dave? You want to help me make this right?
The end. This has been Critical Failure 6, The Good, the Bad, and the Neutral. Written by Robert Bevan. Narrated by Jonathan Sleep. Copyright 2018 by Robert Bevan. Production copyright 2018 by Robert Bevan. For more information, please visit facebook.com/Robert Bevan Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.